Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this morning we're reading from chapter 6 of the 7th canto, first verse. This verse comes when Prahlad Maharaj has been speaking with his schoolmates in the playground about the importance of spiritual life, to which his young schoolmates replied, "Why do we have to worry about this now? We'll deal with that stuff when we get older. That's for old people. We're just kids. We're just having fun. Leave us alone." And he responds with this verse, which is also a very, very well-known verse. Let's do the synonyms first, shall we? Shri Prahlad Uvacha. Prahlad Maharaj said, Komaraha, in the tender age of childhood, Acharet, should practice, Pragya, one who is intelligent, Dharman, occupational duties, Bhagavatam, which are devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iha, in this life, Durlabham, very rarely attained. Manusam, human, Janma, birth, Tat, that, Api, even, Adruvam, impermanent, temporary, Artadam, full of meaning. Shri Prahlada Uvacha, Kumara Acharet Pragyo, Dharman Bhagavataniha, Durlabham Manusang Janma, Nushang Janma, Tadapya Dhruvam Artadam, Komara Acharet Pragyo, Dharman Bhagavataniha, Durlabham Manusang Janma, Tad apya dhruvam artadham. Please chant. Komara acharet pragyo. Dharman bhagavataniha. Durlabham manusam janma. Tad apya dhruvam artadham. Kaumara acharet pragyo, dharman bhagavataniha, durlabham manusam janma, tadapya dhruvam artadam, naram acharet pragyo, dharman bhagavatamiha, Durlabham manusam janma tadapya dhruvam artadam komaram acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha durlabham manusam janma tadapya dhruvam artadam. Anyone else? Komara Matsuet Pragyo Karman Bhagavataniha Durlabham manusam janma tad apyadruvam artadam. Okay, translation. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful, because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. Srila Prabhupada's purport, who would like to read?
The whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, from the very beginning of life, the Brahmacharya system is introduced so that from one's very childhood, from the age of 5 years, one can practice modifying one's human activities so as to engage perfectly in devotional service. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2:40, Svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Modern civilization, not referring to the verdicts of Vedic literature, is so cruel to the members of human society that instead of teaching children to become brahmacharis, it teaches mothers to kill their children even in the womb on the plea of curbing the increase of population. And if by chance a child is saved, he is educated only for sense gratification. Gradually, throughout the entire world, human society is losing interest in the perfection of life. Indeed, men are living like cats and dogs, spoiling the duration of their human lives by actually preparing to transmigrate again to the degraded species among the 8,400,000 forms of life. The Krishna consciousness movement is anxious to serve human society by teaching people to perform devotional service, which can save a human being from being degraded again to animal life.
As already stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Bhagavata Dharma consists of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atma Nivedanam.
Let's stop there for just a minute. What are the meanings of these words? Anyone know? I mean, first of all, what is the overall list we just read?
Nine processes of devotional service.
The nine processes of devotional service. Have you seen this anywhere recently in your experience?
On the wall.
Oh yeah, in the parking lot. yes, this is Prahlad Maharaj's verse. So very quickly, what is Shravanam?
Hearing.
Kirtanam?
Chanting.
Vishnu Smaranam?
Remembering.
Padasevanam? Right, serving the lotus feet. Archanam? Vandanam? Praying. Dasyam. Sakyam. Befriending the Lord. And Atma Nivedanam. Surrendering everything. Right. Like Bhakta Mai. Just in general. All right. Very good. So please continue, Shashi.
In all the schools, colleges, and universities, and at home, all children and youths should be taught to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, they should be taught to hear the instructions of Bhagavad Gita to put them into practice in their lives and thus to become strong in devotional service, free from fear of being degraded to animal life.
Following Bhagavad Dharma has been made extremely easy in this age of Kali. The Shastra says, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Kevalam. One need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Everyone engaged in the practice of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will be completely cleansed from the core of his heart and be saved from the cycle of birth and death.
Good. So please back to the translation. Let's all read the translation together. Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, who practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all their engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, It is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. So this verse begins the Abhideya section of our study of Srimad Bhagavatam. The organizers of the curriculum selected this verse to demonstrate applied knowledge from the Sambandha section that we've just completed. Okay? That's what Abhideya means. Now, first you get the knowledge, and then you apply the knowledge. So this is this verse is selected for the chapter entitled, or this talk entitled, A Purposeful Human Life. Has anyone ever heard of Rick Warren? Who's Rick Warren? What's that? Yeah, the purpose-driven life. Yes, he is a minister, very well-known minister who has very practical applications of Christian theology. And one of his very popular books is The Purpose-Driven Life. And in that book, he encourages people to have a meaning, to have a reason for your existence. There's an expression that be a meaningful specific, not a wandering generality. So if people ask, what is the purpose of your life? People might respond to that by saying, well, I want to help people. That is a wandering generality. Yeah. A meaningful specific would be, I want to hold regular programs in the children's cancer ward, you know, or raise money for this. Something very specific. That is one of the kind of techniques that he talks about in this book. But in Krishna consciousness, we have a different understanding of this phrase, a purpose-driven life. And the purpose of all Vaishnavas is what? Well, in the broadest terms, to please Krishna. Yes, to please Krishna. Devotees all have a single purpose, to please Krishna. Because that is the antithesis of pleasing oneself. In other words, trying to please Krishna includes pleasing oneself. Trying to please oneself does not automatically include pleasing Krishna. But there is that unity. But how to please Krishna? Not only are there 9 processes, there are limitless permutations and combinations of those 9 processes. So how one pleases Krishna is very individual. The purpose is one, but the application is unique. And that is the meaning of simultaneous oneness and difference, achintya beta beta tattva, in the association of devotees. But my main point is talking about this unifying principle of pleasing Krishna. That is the purpose-driven life for the Vaishnava. So think for a moment about Bhagavad Gita. Wow, you just disturbed the most profound, fluid lecture I've ever given.
Just like you said, the purpose, if someone said my purpose is to help people in general, to please Krishna, would that be, that's also a general?
It is a general, and it needs to be a specific. That's correct. In other words, oh, my purpose in life is pleasing Krishna. What are you doing today? I don't know, I don't care, I just want to please Krishna. That devotee is not very advanced, but is still worshipable because he's got the right idea. Okay, so and that's a very good question, by the way. So getting back to the point, when Arjuna is in great anguish at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? What's the first thing out of his mouth? Yes, indirectly. And why does the Lord tell Arjuna he's a fool? On what grounds? Yes, Vaishnava.
He's talking intelligent, but you're asking him to be like a fool.
Yes, you're lamenting like a fool. Why? You're lamenting for something which is not worthy of grief. Never is there a time, natve baham jatanasam, when everyone you see here did not exist, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. That applies to us right here in this classroom this morning as well. Never is there a time when anyone in this room did not exist, nor will there ever be a time when we'll ever cease to be. So here's the first thing from Bhagavad Gita. It is knowledge. Krishna doesn't start off by saying, listen, Arjuna, I'm God, and you better toe the line, right? He doesn't get to the conclusion. He starts with knowledge. He starts with knowledge. I was speaking with Brahmatirtha Prabhu about this. He's a dispute resolution expert, and he was just telling me about a conference he had attended where the speaker had studied people's brain waves at various stages of disputes with a helmet on their head, you know, with detecting where the oxygen was going in the brain through MRI so they could actually tell what parts of the brain were being stimulated at what points. So in most cases, when people are upset, there are some other portion of the brain that is activated. When they are thinking, it is the frontal cortex, right in the forehead. So one of his mentors had developed a technique that when somebody's really upset, the mediator will attempt to give a name to identify the emotion which they're experiencing. Not bringing themselves into it, not rationalizing at all, just hitting it. You're angry, or you're really frustrated. And it has a shocking effect of bringing the person from this emotionally disturbed part of their brain right to the frontal cortex. And all of a sudden they acknowledge, yes, I am. And then they have to start thinking, what am I going to do now? They realize I'm upset. Instead of expressing the upset, they realize they're upset. So I thought this is very similar in what Krishna does with Arjuna. You're not this body. Boom, it makes you think. So I'd like to ask, especially some of our newer practitioners of bhakti, what did you first think when you heard this phrase, you are not this body? Let's start with Trishta. He's the newest person to bhakti in the room here.
Well, I mean, it took me a while to kind of wrap my head around it. I mean, an idea like that is something that goes against everything that I was taught, essentially. It's, you know, you're told, well, yes, you do have a soul. You are this body. And once this body is gone, you go to heaven or hell. I mean, that's what I was taught. And to be told that's not necessarily the case took me a little while to kind of comprehend. It was, I mean, mind-blowing to put it into that kind of a term. And I mean, now that I understand it, understanding that base principle really helps provide a good foundation by which you're able to, you know, build other ideas. So I mean, understanding that as a core fundamental really helps me to further my advancement in bhakti yoga.
Very good. Thank you. So it's knowledge. In other words, it's a foundation for learning more on the spiritual path. How about Michelle? What did you think when you first heard that concept?
I already believed in that. I've always believed in the separation of the body and the soul. So coming here and hearing that, I was like, oh, I already thought that. It makes sense to me. But I really liked hearing a lot more about it, and it makes a lot of sense to me that everyone's a spirit soul, and that's how we all relate. So I've just grew up believing that already, so it wasn't a big mind-blowing thing for me.
I see. Now, for me, it was also something I read, but in impersonalist books, and that did not make an impression on my heart until I heard in context of a whole description of what to do with that knowledge, really. So Krishna starts there. That's very good. Thank you. Anyone else like to comment on this? Yes, Shyamala Krishna.
Reading the book of Miracle on Second Avenue by Mukunda Maharaj, and he said that when he first heard Prabhupada use this, you know, you're not the body, or I'm not the body. I think he used the word I when he was saying it. And Mukunda Maharaj thought, oh, that's interesting. The Swami's not his body. Like, he didn't connect it yet right away, that we're all not.
Right. Yes, Goranga. I thought, if I'm not this body, who am I, or what am I? And then what happened?
And then
Chaitanya
gave me the sauce.
I will.
Could you be more explicit? What kind of sauce did she? Please.
Explain the concept of spirit soul of that actually your identity shouldn't be with your body, because it's obviously temporary.
Very good, very good. So what then what can we do, having once understood we're not this body? Why does Krishna, in other words, why does he start with that? What does that open up the door for? Whole bunch of questions, okay. And let's assume we've answered some of those questions. So what am I? Well, you're a spirit soul. What is my purpose? My purpose is rendering service to my maker. And then we have the basis for devotional service. We have the basis for doing things which are explicitly meant for Krishna's pleasure and not for the pleasure of the body. Right? So this is an example of Sambandha, taking knowledge and then applying it, Abhideya. Right? Sambandha and Abhideya. I'm not this body, now how will I perform? How will I act? Well, I'll perform devotional service. Here Prahlad Maharaj is praising this opportunity. First of all, as being very rare. We'll talk about that in a moment. But also the fact that just a slight amount of devotional service can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. That is quoting a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Can anyone recite that verse? Any scholars? Yeah, neha bikramo naso sti pratyavayana vidyate swapam apyasya dharmasya mahato bayat. Triyate mahato bayat. Right, bayat means what? And maha? Yeah, the greatest fear. There's no loss if you render devotional service. And even just a little advancement can save one from the most dangerous type of fear. So this is another correlation, gets back to what Trishta was saying about, you know, the fear factor of life. What are we afraid of? So not only in modern Judeo-Christianity, many religious traditions teach this: unless you toe the line, you're going to suffer in the future. But we don't say that in Krishna consciousness exactly. We say what? Because we haven't been toeing the line, we're suffering right now. And the terrible part about the suffering we're going through right now is that we don't even realize we're suffering. We are so enamored with being in the illusion that we are the body that we are thinking we're enjoying it to one extent or another for a moment, for a few brief moments. But in fact, it is our theology that we are in hell right now. Prabhupada was in London. He was asked, "Do you have a concept of hell in your religion?" He said, "Yes, London is hell." This was a shocking statement from an Indian who had so recently been subjugated by the British Empire. And the reporter was so shocked he couldn't even speak. And then seeing this, Prabhupada said, "But it is a great credit to the British people that they have created such a great civilization in such a hellish climate." So without knowing we're not this body, we are condemned to staying in a hellish situation where we keep pushing the rock up the hill, like, what was his name? Sisyphus. Yeah, pushing the rock, heavy rock, up to the top of the hill, only to see it roll down the other side, and then having to go down and push it back up and see it roll down again. This is mahato bayat. This is the greatest fear, to spend our whole life and not understand what's going on, to have sufficient intelligence to do it. This is how the verse begins. One who is sufficiently intelligent will understand that this human body is not meant just for gratifying the senses. One will act for the benefit of the spiritual for one's own actual self, the soul, and not just for the body in which one is encased. this is something that is abhidhaya also. This is realized knowledge. This is applied knowledge that that the body is actually a source of misery. That is a bad place to start in presenting Krishna consciousness. Just a little tip. You know, Bhakti Prabhu Brahmatirtha's wife was saying when she first came to the temple, see, she and her husband were already married or engaged before he became a devotee. He went off to India in the Peace Corps and became a devotee and was sending her all these far-out letters from India, and she was wondering, what is he smoking? After he met Prabhupada, and he was chanting, and she was saying, okay. So when he came back, she was, let us say, less than thrilled about his involvement in Krishna consciousness. But she was supporting him, and so she'd go to the temple with him. And when she went to the temple, all the devotees would come to her and say, oh, you're suffering. You're suffering in this material world, so you're so miserable. She said, what are you talking about? I'm perfectly content. What's your problem? Don't tell me. They were trying to convince her that she's suffering, and it didn't work. And just made her think, these people are nuts. See? So I always remember this. It's not a good place to start. Oh, you're so miserable. Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's not the best place to start. There's a funny story about in this regard. Govinda Dasi was in Hawaii with her husband when they invited Srila Prabhupada to come. When they had just gone there to introduce Krishna consciousness. So she was walking down the street and she saw this young man. And this young man had noticed her, this young blonde girl, and he was watching her walk by, and all of a sudden she stopped and turned around and walked over to him. And he thought, oh, she noticed me. And she came up to him and said, excuse me, I don't want to be rude, but I just noticed you're the most miserable looking person I've seen all day. But my spiritual master is here, and he can make you happy. Would you like to come meet him? So he came, and that was the beginning. His name is Balabhadra Prabhu. He runs the ISKCALP program. That was how he was introduced to Krishna consciousness. So I guess sometimes it works. But in general. So anyway, the point is that, yes, we are suffering in a hellish condition without Krishna consciousness because we just think we are something that we're not. And this thing that we think we are is subjected to a lot of restrictions, a lot of pain, a lot of limitations, and ultimately fails us, as we heard in the story of Paranjana. Right? So this is why the most dangerous type of fear is to think one is this body. Because not only does it mean being in a hellish life right now, a life that ends in frustration, but in the next life, going even lower into a condition where there is no sufficient intelligence to understand what's actually going on. And that's the condition of the animal. The animal has no karma. The animal has nothing but the ability to act out that term of imprisonment in that particular body, trying to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. That's hell. That is a hellish condition. And then, through evolution of not species, but consciousness, the soul again returns to the human platform. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions this, 8,400,000 species of life. The human beings comprise how many of those 8,400,000? 400,000, right. All varieties of human beings, ranging from Neanderthals to demigods and everything in between. So those varieties are not that rare out of 8,400,000, right? 400,000 is about, what, 5%. But that is just the beginning, the rarity of the human birth. So one illustration of this is from a recent discovery in science that the a number of cells in the human body is what? Anyone read that? It's about 10 trillion. 10 trillion human cells. Now, does a cell have a soul? Well, what are the symptoms of the presence of the soul? Anyone know? There's consciousness is the overall one symptom, yes, but there's six specific characteristics. What are those six? Yeah, if there's a soul present, there is birth, growth, duration of life, some duration, passing of byproducts, right, like urine, stool, or children. Then? Dwindling. And finally? Death. Right. These are six symptoms that a soul is present. So from this we can understand that the cell also exhibits all of these symptoms, and therefore these cells are also living entities in a very, very low form of life. So there's 10 trillion to start with. But the human body also consists of about 60 trillion parasites or symbiotic organisms that live on our body and in our bodies and contribute to our bodies to one extent or another, and also have their own individual birth, growth, etc. So that makes about 70 trillion living entities. And you thought you were all alone in there. You know, 70 trillion is 1,500, well, it's more than 1,000 times the population of the entire planet, human population. So for every person on Earth, imagine 1,000 times more. That's the kingdom that you rule in your body. That's the size of the kingdom. You are the boss. You say, it's time to get up. All 70 trillion of you get up. You know, it's time to eat. All 70 trillion of you sit down for lunch. You know, you are the boss. You are the monarch of this incredible domain of followers, of faithful followers, of subjects. So just out of 70 trillion, there's just one human being. One soul in the human that has this human body. So that's how rare the human life is. There are so many species and so many hellish births that we could be in. But out of all of them, we have this very rare experience of being a human being. So how to apply this knowledge that we are not this body? This is going from Sambandha to Abhideya. So There is a procedure for learning anything. These four stages of learning is called. The first stage is called unconscious incompetence. Unconscious incompetence. That means you don't even know what you don't know. Right? Unconscious incompetence. There's some knowledge that I lack, and I am so oblivious that I have no idea even of what it is. This is the condition of most people in Kali Yuga. They have never heard they're not this body, or if they heard it, they have no idea what it means. They certainly don't meditate on it or try to understand it, by and large. This is unconscious incompetence. Then the second stage is called conscious incompetence. Yes. That one understands, okay, now I see, I am not this body. But I have no idea how to apply that. Conscious incompetence. I can get it intellectually or theoretically, but as far as my daily activities, I'm really all about sense gratification. Maybe now I'm a little bit aware of that. My activities have not changed. They have not been affected. But I'm at least cognizant now of the distinction between myself and my body and the activities thereof. Okay? Then what is the third stage? Conscious competence. Right. Now one learns what it means to act like a spirit soul. This is bhajana kriya, performing the activities of devotional service. In Jai Prabhu, please accept my obeisances, bowing down even if one doesn't feel like it, getting up even if one doesn't feel like it, conscious competence. Okay, I want to behave like a spirit soul engaged in devotional service. Let me do these activities even if I don't, even if it's a little artificial, a little stilted. You know, it's a little different from what I'm used to. This is conscious competence. One is doing the right things methodically, very consciously. And the final stage of learning, when one masters a subject, what is that called? Unconscious competence, where without even thinking, one automatically acts according to one's knowledge. Now, this in Sanskrit is called vijnana, or realized knowledge. The jnana, I am not this body, becomes eventually vijnana, that acting always on the spiritual platform, that is internalized, it has become part of us. It is not something stilted or artificial. It's something we do because we have knowledge and we have tastes and we have experienced that acting like a body was a drag and acting on the spiritual platform is fun and dynamic and enlightening. See? So this conscious competence brings us to the stage of unconscious competence brings us to the stage eventually of what? What's the final phase after Sambandha and Abhideya? Prayojana. Acting in love of God. It's so fun to be Krishna conscious. It is so fun that, like Giriraj Maharaj, who is coming in a couple of weeks, he's the son of a very successful lawyer. When he became Krishna conscious in the late 60s, it was a kind of a very unusual thing, and his father was very unhappy. So he said to his son, you just leave this Krishna consciousness, and I'll put $1 million in a bank account for you to use as you like. He offered him $1 million to leave. And Giriraj Maharaj said no. He was having too much happiness, more happiness than he could buy for $1 million. So later he told Prabhupada about this. Prabhupada was very proud of that. He said, yes, he wouldn't even give it up for $1 million. Do you think you could, would you be able to pass that test? What's that? Your last $10 million. You really should have been a business mage. Well, the point is that one who has realized the happiness of Krishna consciousness understands that that cannot be duplicated by anything material. And the fact that people who are so materially successful suffer a lot of unhappinesses is evidence to, it should be evidence to us that, yes, real happiness means that every day I can serve Krishna with competence. I know how to practice bhakti. I pray to Krishna, please engage me when I'm chanting my rounds. And then if he gives me some little service to do, I feel enlivened, I feel fortunate, and I do it very happily for him. So when Prahlad Maharaj is saying here, this is the purpose of human life, the actual purpose of human life. He's not talking about something that is just doctrinal. Here is my philosophy about what is purposeful. But rather, escaping the cycle of birth and death is a real purpose. That gives purpose to one's life. Reincarnation is seen in the mystical circles as something kind of far out. You know, but for a devotee, it's a horrible thing. Reincarnation. It is not something that, let's read about and try to understand who we were in our last lifetime. You know, rather, it's something that we say, if I don't get out of this, I'm really, really going to be wasting my time. It's urgent. It is imperative. I see now the results of the mistakes that I made and what the consequences are. I don't want it anymore. Having that kind of conviction is the result of, is one of the byproducts, I should say, of tasting pleasure in Krishna consciousness. If our standard of pleasure is just on the material platform, then we will have a hard time getting that excited about spiritual life. So everything is driven by taste. The actual purpose of life is what? You're too philosophical. What's the real purpose of life? To enjoy. Yes. Ananda Maya Vyasat. The business of the soul is to enjoy. It's interesting, isn't it? Krishna's business is enjoying. And Krishna's parts and parcels business is enjoying also. But, as Srila Prabhupada said, the problem is you do not know how to enjoy. His standard of enjoyment is so cheap that you're missing out on the nectar that is available to you as a human being. So this is what Prahlad Maharaj is saying to his classmates, that the real purpose of life, the real happiness of life, the real success of life is devotional service. And it's so nice that even if you just do a little bit of it, it will save you from having to sink way down into the lower species of life and experience so many painful births before coming again to human life. So it's our purpose is enjoyment. If we know how to practice bhakti, then we'll be enjoying it. If we're not enjoying it, something is wrong and we should get help. So what do you think? Any comments on this? Arjun?
Please.
I
heard in a recent lecture that our purpose is not to go back to Godhead. Our purpose is actually to serve, to do devotional service, to serve Krishna in life after life. So how does that, I know that you're, what you're saying is also right, and that is, so how do we connect both to that? I want to go back to Godhead, I don't want to reincarnate.
Mm-hmm. But I'll stay and serve Krishna life after life. That's actually a higher platform. Srila Prabhupada commented on this point, essentially saying that we should not act beyond our realization. If we're actually driven by compassion, saying, I'd rather stay here in this material world and try to liberate others, then that's a very, very high platform. For most of us, he said, we should hanker to go back to God. It is safer, in other words, to make sure that we are getting the basics before we try to pole vault to this artificially high platform. Prahlad Maharaj says this, let me stay, as far as I'm concerned, let me stay until all of these fools and rascals are liberated. But that was Prahlad, who's a great devotee. Better for us that we be very focused and say, I really have had enough. I'm going to quote my favorite Vaishnava poet, Akendra Prabhu. Stretched on the rack, flat on my back, is the only time I'm looking up. up to the sky where I want to fly, because I done had enough. These are actually wise and realized words in the disguise of foot stomping country tunes. Yeah, have we had enough? Have we actually had enough? This is one of the beautiful things about Krishna consciousness, that as you get older, you get more realizations automatically. So that's why it's wonderful that while you're young, you're trying to understand these things. No problem becoming convinced about the miseries of material life once you pass around 45 or 50. But just in economics, they teach you that if you invest a very small amount of money when you're young, like $1,000 a year, if you can manage to save $1,000 a year and put that in the bank, then by the time you are ready to retire, you'll have millions of dollars. But if you start saving money when you're 55, thinking, well, I'm going to retire in 10 years, I better save up, then you can put tens of thousands in and you'll have much, much less by the time you're ready to retire. So that's a beautiful thing about your using your youth. Komara Archaret Pragya. Well, now, while you're young, sooner the better. It's always too late But it's never too early to be Krishna conscious. Okay. Other comments? Yes? We got a mic down there. Is anyone? Please. Thank you.
Just to, what you'd said was making me think about another point in terms of practicing devotional service when we're young. Just, you know, if I love a person, I don't want to just give them something that's old and wilted and tired that can't really maybe do so much. I would want to give them something when it's fresh. I don't send my mother like old flowers on her birthday. It's something wrong there.
Uh-huh.
If I actually have affection for a person, I want to give them the best thing that I can possibly give them.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yes. So Prahlad's schoolmates were hearing him and he said, yeah, we'll get to that later. And this is kind of the materialistic thought, isn't it? Now, while I'm young, let me enjoy. Later, when I can't enjoy anymore, then I'll offer myself to God. There's a story about this. There's a materialistic devotee named Gopal Bone. So he's very humorous. He always does things that, in the name of devotional service, are very self-centered. For example, he was making a garland out of banana flowers. So banana flowers are these flowers that can be used either as a flower or a vegetable. So Gopal Bone's making a big garland of banana flowers, and his friend comes up. Oh, very nice garland. Who are you making that for? I'm making this for Krishna, and Krishna's going to personally come and take this garland from me. And his friend is skeptical. He says, oh, and if Krishna doesn't personally come and if Krishna doesn't personally come and accept this garland from me, then I'm going to cook it up and eat it. So, you follow the point? You just, well, that.
I mean,
well, let me try another one. Gopal is carrying a load of wheat, and a big wind comes along and blows it out of his arms into the air, and it's all flying through the air. So before it touches the ground, he goes, "Govinda Boga, I offer this to Krishna." So, yes, when I lose it, then I'll offer it to Krishna. Otherwise, it's for me. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes we meet people who have suffered a lot in their lives. Mm. And so they ask questions, why have I suffered? And, you know, I believe in God. Maybe they might be religious, but they always have that. Why did I suffer so much? Mm. So, and often we don't have much time to. Well, how should we at least? What foundation? You know, we can say, oh, it was your karma, which I think sometimes can make. I've seen sometimes makes it angry. They get more bewildered.
Yeah.
So you mean I did it all? Like it was all my fault?
Yeah. No comfort.
So they don't get that. So what should be the foundation with these people?
The foundation should be compassion. And we see people suffering, and although we in our own life can see that our suffering is a result of our own activities, we should also see, or we can also see, that other people may not have that realization. Therefore, they're not only suffering, but they're doing things which are going to perpetuate and compound their suffering. So the realized response to that is compassion. And that means that if somebody says they're ill, we feel bad. We don't just say, a devotee doesn't say, oh, well, that's just your karma, you're in Maya, you're getting what you deserve. You know, this is a very foolish response. If somebody is suffering, we care about that. But what the difference is between the compassion of the devotee and the ordinary compassion is that we want to deal with the root cause of the problem. You know, we want to help them understand why they are suffering and do something about their future suffering. See? So this kind of work is actually the highest welfare work for that reason, the work of spreading Krishna consciousness, sharing it with others selflessly, but people don't appreciate it. Just like in my chaplain's group, the very nice group of sincere people serving God in their according to the understanding in their own way. But the drift of the group is, okay, let's do something now practical. Let's do something for humanity. wanted help with a habitat for humanity, a house, or some kind of feeding program for the homeless or something. These are things that are the expression of their compassion. And it's unfortunate because the actual success of compassion is helping someone become God conscious, right? So the conviction is lacking in them to say that, no, the real compassion will help people, will mean to help people love God. So this is a result of a poor fund of knowledge, not a lack of sincerity, just a poor fund of knowledge. They don't know they're not this body. And therefore everything else from that is skewed. See, just like starting a complicated algebra formula, 2 and 2 is 5, everything else may be done exactly right, but the answer will be wrong because the premise was wrong to start with. So that's why Krishna starts in that way. And that's why we also need to start like that. Give them knowledge. Bring their brains to the frontal cortex. You are not this body. All right, other comments? All right, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.